If you look at the ethos of sport and what the values of sport, sport espouses, and when it is healthy and vibrant, it respects human rights and promotes human rights.
Welcome to Voices of Dignity, a UN Human Rights podcast series. I'm Kayloy Henry from UN Human Rights. In the coming weeks, we bring you in-depth conversations with thought leaders and experts looking at human rights issues and the future of human rights. In this episode, we take a look at how sports is a vehicle to champion human rights with Mary Harvey. Stay tuned. Sports are a natural ally when it comes to promoting and advocating human rights. Good sportsmanship, fair play, inclusion, teamwork, all have residence in the human rights sphere. Mary Harvey believes sports are a key tool in improving access to and knowledge of human rights to everyone, everywhere. As a chief executive for the Center for Sports and Human Rights, Mary works towards advancing a world where sports and human rights are fully respected and promoted. An athlete herself, Mary spent many years as part of the United States women's football team and won Olympic gold in 1996 with the team. She also played in the very first FIFA Women's World Cup and was part of the successful team to bring the FIFA World Cup to North America in 2026. I started out by asking Mary, what role does sport actually play when it comes to the promotion and advocacy of human rights?
If you look at the ethos of sport and what the values of sport, sport espouses, and when it is healthy and vibrant, it respects human rights and promotes human rights. The very ethos of sport is human rights are just a part of it, and they always have been. If you look at also some of the largest sporting bodies in the world, and you look at their preambles or their constitutions, they talk about, you know, that sport is inherently good, and that it furthers human values. And so, you know, for me and for the work that we do at the center, in order for sport to truly deliver on what it is to billions of people around the world as a social good and its social license, ground it before you can do anything else, grounded in that is a respect for human rights and a protection of human rights and an advancement of human rights through sport.
There are certain issues that sports, in terms of human rights, particularly has something to say on or particularly deals with. I'm thinking about issues of equality, for example, pay disparities. I'm thinking about discrimination, in particular, racist and xenophobic chanting at matches. And also from a business and human rights point of view, when you're looking at people who are involved in the value chains, people who are involved in making the equipment or building the stadiums and that sort of thing, how can your organization in particular help to address or advocate on some of these issues?
We are a multi-stakeholder. We're an independent center, but we're also multi-stakeholder in our design. So we're doing our best work when we bring all of the different lenses from all different areas, including civil society, human rights defenders, affected people, when we bring all of those lenses to bear on challenges in sport. So what's the center do? The center, we self-describe as a human rights organization for the world of sport. So what that means is all of this work on sport and human rights is new. Right, we've had heard a lot about human rights and supply chains with respect to the sporting goods industry, and that's been decades in the making. But now, when it comes to sport actually embedding human rights into its bidding policies, into its governance, into decisions it makes, this is all new. Where does sport go for guidance on how to do this work? That's what the center does. So the center brings all these different lenses to bear to help sport.
Let's look at your human rights volunteer program and the impact for that. Can you share some of the success stories from the human rights volunteers program at the World Cup in Qatar? And how are you planning to use this program, rolling it out across the rest of the world?
Well, thanks for the question about the Human Rights Volunteers Program. What it was is it's a group of volunteers that were specifically trained by the UN Office for Human Rights. They went through an observer training program by OHCHR on how to observe and spot potential human rights risks or harms. And then based on that, we were deployed, and including my staff, so I sent about half my team down there to help FIFA with this. We deployed ourselves in every stadium and every fan zone at the FIFA World Cup 2022 in Qatar. So this was games time, what we call games time. So it's not the preparation of building stadiums and all. This is at the tournament itself while it's happening. And every single day, you have an opportunity to make operational changes. So what if those operational changes were based on observing? So having a whole group of volunteers observing security checkpoints, transportation access points, whether or not people with visible or not visible disabilities had access to transportation that helped them, whether or not there was any discrimination that was observed, harassment or abuse. And that could be in fan zones, in the stadium. What that resulted in was, for certain observed instances, there was an escalation process that went all the way up to FIFA, and there was a resolution. And in other cases, it was simply operational reporting so that changes could be made the next day that would resolve or address the issue.
Let's talk a little bit about the children's rights at the upcoming FIFA World Cup. What are some of the biggest obstacles to keeping kids safe during events like the FIFA World Cup? And what plans do you have to help overcome some of these obstacles? So you often hear about, you know, the concern about the safety of children during particularly large-scale sporting events. What is your take on that?
Well, there's numerous risks to children. And so what we know from previous sporting events is that these risks to children are predictable. These sporting events, they happen at a city level. If it's a World Cup or an Olympic Games or whatever, it's done in cities. And as a result of the operational footprint that interacts with people in a certain way, right, the salient risks are predictable. So given that, what do we know about how to prevent those and address them before they happen, given that we know that they're likely to occur? That is where we based the program that we're working on. It's funded by the Oak Foundation. It has two basic elements to it, or actually three basic elements to it. The first one is fundamentally rooted in child protection. And that is through the lens of the event itself and what risks there are to children. And so you mentioned, why are some of the reasons why sport has risks to children, particularly sporting events. One of the big reasons is you don't have a lot of agencies that work within municipalities. They don't talk to each other in a lot of cases. Or if they do talk to each other, they're not talking to grassroots sport organizations or the organizations that help put on a sporting event. So part of our work will be to make sure that all of these moving parts, these different actors, are linked together. And the second part of it is to link with grassroots sport organizations around safeguarding, coach education, reporting, things like this. And so that's sort of the safety and safeguarding aspect of it. And then beyond that, from that basis, you then get into child voice and agency. So it's voices of children. How can children's voices be incorporated into decisions that affect them?
And last question. This is the 75th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And one of the things that we've really been looking at is the future for human rights, getting people to reimagine what human rights will be like, looking to UDHR 100, so 25 years in advance, but you could go 1 year, 5 years, up to 25 if you wish. Where do you see the interaction between sports and human rights in that time? Where would you like it to be?
For trying to make human rights something that is more everyday that we think about, sport provides that connection to people in an everyday way, and it also connects to people emotionally. So if you think about those two lenses. One, it makes human rights more approachable because you can connect it to sport. When Marcus Rashford is the subject of racism and discrimination, he's somebody everyone can relate to. Doesn't mean he's any different than anybody else, but he's someone that people can relate to because of who he is. But also something like the World Cup or the Olympic Games, attaching human rights and visibility of human rights challenges to those events is a wonderful way to educate people about human rights. And that makes it very relevant for it. So I'd say those two areas are really a very powerful spotlight on sort of the next 25 years for human rights. We hope that the more and more that sport and human rights are profiled together, that it will provide an opportunity for people to really see those human rights close to home, which was part of, you know, the preamble, of course, back at the UDHR when it was written in 1948.
All right. Mary Harvey, thank you so very much.
Well, we've come to the end of this episode of Voices of Dignity, Sports Champions Human Rights, with Mary Harvey of the Center for Sports and Human Rights. I want to thank Mary for her insights in this wide-ranging discussion. If you want to learn more about the connection between sports and human rights, then please go to our website, www.ohchr.org. Next time, we learned about how human rights informs the Sustainable Development Goals with Professor Sandra Liebenberg. I'm Kayla Henry. Thanks for listening.